evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 3rd, 2015. The leader of a South Sudanese political party goes missing.
My wife called Mayan not to go home because there were some officials at home. They came with 3B8, so it was numberless, and they were asking for Mayan.
And the death toll rises in the Kenya university attacks by Al-Shabaab.
We will not be intimidated by acts of terror. We will stand united. We will fight them up to the last man. We will take the war to their doorsteps.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of a new South Sudanese political party has gone missing for the last 2 days, according to party officials. They say Peter Mayen Majongdeet, interim chairman of the People Liberal Party, was arrested at his home Wednesday night by an identified man who forced him into a car with no plate number. Philip Thornaleu has the story from Juba.
Mijung Lang Mijak, head of the People's Liberal Party, Youth League, says an identified man threatened his party leader before he was arrested this week. Mijak says he was not surprised to hear of Majongdeet's arrest.
There was a statement that was made by our chairman, which is Peter Mayen Majongdeet, and it came out on Monday on Juba Monitor, and I think that's what caused this problem to happen. And then I think after when people read the newspaper, that's when they sent some security personnel to his place. From there, Mayen's wife called Mayen not to go home because there were some officials at home. They came with 3B8, so it was numberless, and they were asking for Mayen.
Mijak says after his statement was carried on Juba Monitor on Monday, the 41-year-old politician did not return to his home until 7 o'clock Wednesday evening. He says Mayen was then arrested and taken to a unknown location in Juba. Mijak says other leading party officials, including the Secretary General, have gone into hiding after receiving threatening phone calls with untraceable numbers.
Our Secretary General of PLP, they've been calling him at the same time when they were looking for this guy, but he was threatened at the same time, so he had to switch off all his phone. Even right now, seen yesterday, I never even get a hold of him.
Mijak says, seen Wednesday night, members of Mayan's family deserted their home for fear of being harassed. The People Liberal Party was launched in late February in Juba. Since that time, Mayen had spoken to reporters at several news conferences and commented on several political issues and challenges facing the country. This week, Mayen challenged the government to recover $4 billion allegedly stolen by senior politicians. The People Liberal Party's chairman says the Kiir administration should focus on recovering the stolen money instead of looking for loans. In July 2013, President Salva Kiir wrote a letter to government officials requesting they return the $4 billion to government coffers. Last week, South Sudan's parliament authorized the Minister of Finance to negotiate a loan worth $5 million to close budget gaps created by the falling price of crude oil and the 15-month-old conflict that led to a shutdown of oil fields in Unity State. The government declined to comment on the Mayan's disappearance. For VOA News, I'm Philip Thornaleu reporting from Juba.
A Juba University lecturer says South Sudan must be transparent as it borrows millions of dollars to fill a budget hole caused by lower demand for oil in the global markets and a steep drop in oil revenues. Nelson Leben warns the nation's future generation will be burdened with debt if the government borrows too much money. Charlton Doki has the story for VOA from Juba.
Top government officials have not disclosed how much money the country has borrowed, nor the terms of those loans since South Sudan gained independence nearly 4 years ago. Just last week, the South Sudan Parliament approved a government request to borrow $500 million from the National Bank of Qatar. Bloomberg News reported in the middle of 2012 that South Sudan had already borrowed about $500 million, including $100 million from Qatar National Bank, $50 million from the International Monetary Fund, and another 100 million from the South Africa-based CFC Stanbic Bank Holdings. The money was used to offset a dollar shortage and to fund government spending after a shutdown in oil production following a dispute with Khartoum. 98% of South Sudan's revenue comes from oil. Leben Nelson Moreau, a professor of development studies at Juba University, says it's all right for the government to borrow money so long as it doesn't borrow too much and it's transparent about the process.
If you borrow money, one problem is what the terms are, and I think it's not being done in a very transparent way. The discussions are not known, for example, how much they are going to pay in interest and so on. So that is very important because the government will have to pay back. So and this paying back means that it is a burden for the country.
James Alich Garang, a senior economist at the Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says the government must borrow money wisely.
If you borrow the whole $500 million and spend it on consumption, that will not be productive. That will not be adding any value to the economy. And it will be tantamount to burdening the next generation, spending on infrastructure in general, and also spending on human capital formation, education and health, and also spending in restoration of peace. So these three areas, if a government, let's say, puts aside 10% of the overall $500 million, then we could say, kudos, well done. That little money would be recycled back to the economy. But if you consume, it is like just putting it in a drain and it goes to waste.
Garang agrees with Moreau that it's good to borrow money to keep the economy running, but the danger is in borrowing too much.
Going forward, there should be strategies within the ministry looking very hard to find out how many loans have we borrowed, on what time, what is their maturity, and how much we owe. Because the fear is like this: when a nation borrows so much, there will come a time when it cannot be able to pay.
Moreau says rather than using the loans to pay for improved health care and education, the government will most likely use it to fund military-related items and pay civil servants' salaries due to the ongoing conflict. Moreau says the only way for the government to stop borrowing millions of dollars is to end the conflict and increase its revenue sources.
We should address the political problem. We should stop the war. Some of these financial crises are directly linked to the current political situation, linked to the ongoing conflict.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Northern Bahr el Ghazal State Assembly reconvened this week after a three-month recess. A spokesman for the caretaker governor says the state lawmakers broke the law when they resumed legislative business without seeking approval from the governor. Abraham Agot reports from Awil.
Tensions have been running high between Northern Bahr el Ghazal State's Assembly and its state's caretaker governor, Quel Aguirre Quel, since lawmakers voted to impeach Quel in January. They accused the caretaker governor of a list of ills, including corruption, nepotism, abuse of power, and embezzling funds. Quel has refused to step down. The leadership of the State Assembly has also said it does not recognize Quel's cabinet. Ajak Thiep Thiep is the State Legislative Assembly's chairman of Information and Communication. He says lawmakers did seek approval from Quel's office to reconvene, but never got it. He says a state assembly was within its rights and within the law when it reconvened.
Our constitution said government, executive, and legislature should agree on opening process. So the powers of the constitution said that if the governor is not ready for the first time and second time, automatically assembly will go and open. Because the first opening did not require the forum and did not, and there was no any debate on that opening. Only one third majority, 17 or 15 members, should opening the assembly.
According to the official record, 27 out of 49 lawmakers turned up for the first state assembly meeting in 3 months recess early this week. Northern Bahr el Ghazal state voters have called for President Kiir to intervene in political role in their state. Honorable Santino Mayuat Ngong says, President Kiir appointed Quill as caretaker governor of Northern Barakazali State after reappointing the previous governor, Paul Malongawan, as chief of general staff in the National Army. Under South Sudan's transitional constitution, caretaker governors are supposed to remain in offices for only 60 days, after which a new governor is supposed to be elected by the people. Quill was in office for 9 months when the state legislature voted to impeach him on January 26 this year. Quill is currently in Juba. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in a wheel.
We now turn to northeastern Kenya, where at least 147 people were killed and dozens others injured in an attack carried out on a university by Al-Shabaab. The town of Garissa is trying to pick up the pieces after one of the worst terror attacks in Kenya's history, as we hear from VOA's Gabe Joslo in Garissa.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the attack, which began shortly before dawn at Garissa University College. Security officials say gunmen stormed the campus, killing two guards before taking over a section of the residence halls and holding some students hostage. Kenyan military forces battled the militants for most of the day. Kenyan authorities said four of the assailants were killed and one arrested during operations. Interior Secretary Joseph Nkasari told reporters in Garissa late Thursday that operations had concluded about 16 hours after the attack began.
The government was on top of this. The security situation in the country, and this incident which happened today is one of those incidents which surprised any country.
Kenya's police chief issued a nighttime curfew in four eastern counties, including Garissa, to last for 2 weeks in response to the terror threat. Thursday's attack was deadlier than the 2013 siege on the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi, when Al-Shabaab gunmen killed 67 people over multiple days. The Member of Parliament for Garissa Township, Adan Duale, said Kenya will continue to fight against the terrorist group.
We will not be intimidated by acts of terror. We will stand united. We will fight them up to the last man. We will take the war to their doorsteps.
In an address to the nation earlier in the day, President Uhuru Kenyatta offered his condolences to the families of victims while urging Kenyans to stay calm.
This is a moment for everyone throughout the country to be vigilant as we confront and defeat our enemies.
The president also announced that he would fast-track the training of 10,000 additional police, saying the country has suffered unnecessarily due to shortage of security personnel. Kenyan authorities have named alleged Al-Shabaab commander Mohamed Mohamud as the mastermind of the attack. A security brief seen by VOA says Mohamud, also known as Gamadere, was a madrasa teacher in Garissa before joining the Somali militant group. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A closer look at the root causes of food insecurity in South Sudan. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think Africa is lagging behind in electricity power generation?
Africa is lagging behind because more industries are coming up, but then the power being produced by the country is still as it is. Therefore, there's more pressure on the current power production.
I think it's because of myopic view and also because of our governance structures. Because people come in with ambitions to do every single thing. So you have a government in power who wants to do power, water, road, you know, jack of all trades.
The leadership and the corruption is the main factor that is making us lag behind as far as electricity generation is concerned. But otherwise, we cannot have industrialization or we cannot even have that development you talk about.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, headline news by South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Pakistan evacuated nearly 200 of its citizens from Yemen today as Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif traveled to Turkey for talks with the country's top leaders on the Yemen crisis. Following discussions with Turkey's Prime Minister in Ankara, Mr. Sharif urged the parties in the Yemen conflict to find a peaceful solution. Pakistan has yet to decide whether to join a Saudi-led coalition that has been carrying out airstrikes for more than a week to halt the advance of Houthi Shiite rebels in Yemen. Largely Sunni Pakistan is a regional ally of Saudi Arabia. Yesterday, Yemeni officials said the rebels and their allies fought their way through the center of Aden and seized the presidential palace in the key southern port city. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says a framework agreement reached with world powers will protect Iran's nuclear rights and provide relief from international sanctions. In a televised address to the nation, Mr. Rouhani said the nuclear agreement is in acceptance of Iran's right to enrich uranium on its own territory, noting the country will be pursuing peaceful goals. He said centrifuges have to spin while people's lives and the economy have to move forward. And finally, Christians around the world are observing Good Friday, marking the crucifixion of those who believe in Jesus Christ. Thousands of pilgrims crowded into the narrow cobblestone alleyways of Jerusalem's Old City for the traditional Good Friday procession. Many carried big wooden crosses as they marched down the historic Via Dolorosa, or Way of Sorrows. They sang hymns and read scriptures as they visited the 14 stations of the cross, which retell the gospel story of Christ's final hours and his death on the cross. The faithful came from all over the world. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
In our last part of series on food insecurity this week, we look at South Sudan's Warrap State, where, like many places in the country, livestock is the mainstay of the economy. But even though there are more cows, goats, and sheep in Warrap State than there are people, meat prices have gone up sharply in the past year. As Santino Monut reports from Kwajok, consumers and business owners are not in good terms.
It is early morning in Kwajok. Aduchol is about halfway down a line of several women waiting to buy meat from a butcher. When a turn finally comes, she is able to purchase just half a kilo of beef. It is supposed to be enough to feed her family. But Aduchol says with such a small piece of meat, someone will have to go without.
This is half a kilo and you can see it is small. Some people will not eat meat. If it was a kilo, it could have been enough for my family.
Kwajok has been going through a meat price crisis, and many consumers are blaming cattle brokers or middlemen. At the Kwajok Auction Center, on the outskirts of Warrap State capital, people outnumber the cows and goats and sheep. Most of the people are middlemen. Last year, locals says the middlemen were buying livestock at reasonable prices and then selling it to butchers at abnormal high prices. When the butchers put their prices up, the town council intervened and reversed the price rise. So the butchers went to strike and there was no meat in Kwajok for a week. Akoda Jech was Kwajok town council clerk last year. It was a judge who ordered butchers to lower their prices. Today, he is executive director of Kwajok Municipality. He blames the middlemen for causing the prices of meat to shoot up the way it did.
The middle class people who are buying the cattle should stop this system because we are one people. We cannot cheat ourselves. Probably we are cheating our people.
Adandeng runs a restaurant in Kwajok. She says her business has been operating at a loss since the price of meat skyrocketed. She also points finger for the high prices at brokers.
We need to trace where the cattle are bought in rural areas to find out what is going on in rural areas, auction centers, because I believe middlemen are the ones that increase the prices. They buy low and sell at the price they want.
But Mating Majok defends himself in other middlemen. He says he and his livestock broker's colleagues add just enough to the price they pay for livestock to keep their heads above water.
The problem is the amount we pay the owners for their livestock. The owners sometimes come with a good price at 800 or 700 South Sudanese pounds. Maybe after bartering, they will accept 500 pounds.
Busher Ibrahim Abdallah also comes to the defense of middlemen. Abdallah says price of everything has gone up, not just meat.
The prices are not like before in the market. Before, kilo of cow meat was 16. Now it is 18 South Sudanese pounds. And that of goat is now 32 South Sudanese pounds. The problem are high prices in the market.
Andrea Dub, a director in the State Ministry of Animal Resources and Fisheries, has a different understanding of the matter. According to him, livestock traders are buying livestock at a reasonable prices in Warab State and then take it to other states where livestock fetches a higher price.
When the trader finds the livestock are lower here, they buy it from lower prices and then they go and sell it to Wau, and then other people they go to Yambio. The first class bull in Yambio is 5,000, 6,000, and in Wau is 3,000, 2,000 and something.
He says traders from Warab State travel as far as the Equatorial region to sell their livestock. That means there is less meat available in Warab, but demands remain the same. And that pushes up local prices. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, estimate there are 11 million cows and 19 million goats and sheep in South Sudan, or 2.5 times more livestock than people. The FAO says more than 8% of South Sudanese depend on livestock for a living. For VOA News, I am Santino Manut, IUL. In Kwajok.
A South Sudanese agriculture expert says the country needs a combined effort to combat food insecurity threatening families living in areas hard hit by the conflict. Sylvester Kakat says South Sudan's research institutions should share knowledge with other African institutions so that they can in turn help local farmers use modern farming technologies. He says providing enough food for every family in South Sudan is not an easy task.
Water resources, Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Industry, and all the universities, they come together, Minister of Roads, because you need a feeder road. A farmer sitting down in Maridi will not produce enough because he knows there is no road to Juba. So nowadays, you bring all the stakeholders, including farmers, to identify the problem and to come up with a solution. So those are things that our people can do. We have a lot of people who are qualified to do so.
Are there institutions in the country run by the Ministry of Agriculture or international aid agencies that help farmers identify new ways of producing food?
Yeah, there are institutions within the Ministry of Agriculture that is research unit, which is supposed to be semi-autonomous agricultural research. Once it is semi-autonomous, it will have that power to engage other research institutions within the neighboring countries and overseas to interact positively and copy the technologies.
What is your prescription for this problem?
The Maputo Protocol, that states that all African countries, the government, they need to put at least 10% of their annual budget into agriculture. Most of the countries have done that, with a few exceptions. But the countries like Tanzania, Uganda, Ghana, they put some money into agriculture.
But every time when there is a big occasion in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir has been on record saying they want to use the money of the petroleum to fuel agriculture. How do we explain that statement which he has been making?
We thank our President Salva Kiir for giving value to agriculture and mentioning in every occasion. But the truth of the matter is that how much is that much, and how real is the claim of putting agriculture as a priority? For example, in Ghana, the government subsidized the price of seed. The official price of seed of maize in the market from the seed company is 4 CDs. The government subsidizes and every farmer buys it at 2 CDs, which is half. That is a contribution of the government. And the government builds what they call national storage, because most of the farmers, they don't have a good place to store their produce. So by the time of harvest, they take their produce in that store, they pay a little fee, and they go find their market and sell it. That's the government contribution.
Some critics are saying that the government is ignoring where there is a lot of activities of farmers, and they are not supporting these farmers. A case in point is they're saying Western Equatoria is an agricultural belt in South Sudan, and no support has been given to farmers in that region from time immemorial. Can you help us explain this statement?
The Green Belt, where the Western Equatorial Force and Ironstone Plateau, where also part of Western Equatorial Force, those are high production areas for so many crops. But we have a limited access to support, probably because of the geography. Western Equatoria is far away from Juba, which is the center of the market. Moreover, Western Equatoria was a place and is a still place where there was the only research station in the whole of southern Sudan in those days. And that research station was founded in 1947, as early as 1947.
That's Sylvester Kaka, a former consultant at South Sudan's Ministry of Agriculture. Kaka has been involved in agriculture research in Sudan and several African countries. He was speaking with me from Nigeria last week. And that's the end of our show for this week. We now leave you with a traditional song by farmers from Maridi County in Western Equatorial State. We have been listening to a traditional Baka song by farmers from Maridi County in Western Equatorial State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. You have a peaceful Easter weekend. Please remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.